Hello, I'm Charlotte Ricker-Smith, and you're listening to Free Rein Podcast. Hello, I'm Charlotte Ricker-Smith, and this is my very first podcast, which is really quite exciting. Well, it's exciting for me anyway. It's exciting for a number of reasons. Number one, because I have been talking about doing this podcast for a very long time, and it's finally out there. Woohoo. Secondly, I'm a big equestrian fan. I've got a horse. Oh, thanks, Peps, who just introduced herself there in quite a timely way. I'm out riding her now, actually. It's a glorious, sunny morning. I think it might be the 1st of May today, and it's just been... The winter's been very long. The weather has been hideous. Yes, Pepper, it has. And so it's just been miserable. And now it feels... It's still freezing, to be honest, but it's sunny, so I'm happy. I'm out with my horse and my dog, and it's a gorgeous morning. I thought I'd take the opportunity to introduce this podcast. So, yes, why another podcast? There are already quite a lot of podcasts out there. There are thousands, millions of podcasts out there. But I don't think there's anything quite like this. Now, I am an equestrian journalist, which means I get to interview some of the biggest names in equestrian sport. I feel really lucky to have done that, and it's something I love doing. I love chatting to the top riders. I love finding out what makes them tick. I like finding out the person behind the horse. But the frustrating thing is that when you're writing for a magazine or you're interviewing for television, I do a bit of presenting as well, you're obviously limited to the number of words on a page or the number of minutes of airtime you get. And so I thought, well, if I do my own podcast, I can interview who I want, I can ask them whatever I want, within reason, and I can edit out what I want and keep in what I want, which means that you guys get to hear the whole interview, you get everything in full, the juicy bits don't get cut, or the bit that I think, you get the full interview, you get the unedited, uncut version. And I think this means you really get to know your equestrian heroes, you really get to see the person. So first up, she's very snorty today, aren't you, Pepper? Got something in your nose. So first up in my podcast are the Funnels, Pippa and William, one of the most successful and famous equestrian couples in the world. They're also one of the loveliest equestrian couples that you're likely to meet. I've interviewed them a number of times over the years, and they are always so lovely to talk to, really open and honest, really funny. Pippa particularly is very open about sort of the problems she's faced, I guess. She's spoken a lot about her confidence problems, about maintaining a positive mental attitude and how she's overcome that. She certainly has overcome it because she's won pretty much everything. She was the first rider to ever win the Rolex Grand Slam of eventing, which means she won Kentucky, badminton and Burley consecutively, which is pretty impressive. She also won badminton, actually. She's won badminton three times, twice with Supreme Rock and once with Primrose Pride. Now, I think that's right. I'm hoping it's right. I haven't checked my notes because I'm on a horse and notes are in my pocket and I've already got one hand on my dictaphone. One very cold hand on my dictaphone because it's got no glove on. As I said, it is rather chilly. Pippa's also won a load of medals. She's won Olympic individual silver. She's also won individual bronze and team silver. She's won European medals, gold medals. There's not much this woman hasn't done, really. And her husband, William, he's none too shoddy either. International show jumper. He's ridden for Great Britain 30 times or more. He won European gold at the 2014 Europeans. Sorry, European gold, yeah. He won European gold in 2014. The very gorgeous Billy Congo, who he bred himself. But probably his biggest success has been winning Hickstead an incredible three times on the same horse. He won it in 2006, 2008, 2009 with Mondrian. Mondrian. I'm not sure. It's got two A's in it. I should have asked William in the interview, but I didn't. Apologies for that. As well as being a very successful show jumper, William is also a very successful breeder and producer. He runs Billy Stud with Donald Barwell. Pippa's also heavily involved in that, producing the young horses. And they're really putting British breeding on the map, which is fantastic. So they're a fairly formidable couple, but they're not formidable at all in person. They are, as I said, they're lovely, they're warm, they're friendly, they're open. They let me into their house one very cold December evening. We spent an evening over gin and tonics, chatting about their life and many other things. And yes, as I said, I did say December. It's taken me 6 months to get this done, which is slightly ridiculous. There are various reasons for this. as I said, the whole editing process, it's great that I can edit myself, but then it also means I have to edit myself, which is quite hard because there was a lot of good material there. I didn't want to leave anything out. And what I actually did in the end, I've split it into two podcasts. So this first one is a bit more of a personal look, talking about how they met, the lies behind the horses. And the second one is where I will put questions to them that I got from the lovely guys at Twitter Eventing, the Facebook page. Thank you for that. Also, another reason for slowing me down is the technology side of things, because I love interviewing people, but the whole tech side of it, I'm not so comfortable with. And I did struggle. I had to get my head around GarageBand. And so I did what any self-respecting, independent, strong-minded businesswoman does. I asked my husband. So thank you, Dean, so much for your help with this podcast. Enough of me rambling on. I've actually just come to a really nice hill. I'm going to have a little canter up this hill. So I'm going to be quiet and stop rambling. And I'll join you afterwards. But in the meantime, let's hear what Pippa and William have got to say. See ya. I wanted to interview you both was because I did an interview at Blenheim with you guys and it was really, really popular. It's now at 87,000 views, but then Pippa, you told me it's had even more than that because it's gone viral, which is quite funny. Who did what with the clip?
Well, that was some of the boys that work for us that work down at Jordan's farm. William, I think you can explain because it was a bit rude what they did.
Yes.
What do they do?
Down. So, William doesn't come very often.
No, so what I said at the end of the cross country, I think.
So it was nice that William's here. He doesn't come very often.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how
they
edited that.
Cut it all. No, I said it's not very often my husband comes. That's right. That's yes. What I said, and they had hysterically funny interview.
And it went viral, I hear. So there you go. But even without that, it was very popular. People. Really, they really like you, really warm to you, and so I thought you had met a great people for the podcast. I'm going to start off first of all just asking just silly things, things maybe not horse related, just so people get an understanding of you. What's your favourite TV programme?
Well, I can answer William's is Emmerdale Coronation.
Well, why don't you do yours and I'll do mine?
I think you better do yours first,
because
I didn't have to think.
Well, you've done mine.
So Emmerdale and Corrie?
Probably.
No, EastEnders.
Emmerdale. No, EastEnders, I'm not so...
It's so depressing. I turn it on, they're all shouting.
Not EastEnders, not really.
So you're so...
If I'm here, I watch them. I mean, I won't go out the way if I'm... But if I'm here, I don't record them or anything daft like that. But.
I never wouldn't have had you down as a soap fan.
There you are.
What about Saturday Night TV, X Factor, Strictly?
We're not here enough on a weekend.
No, I sort of collapse in a chair and in front of the fire and often watch whatever William's got on, whether it's football or so. But I often crash out I enjoy watching it, so I wouldn't like that. I mean, I enjoy watching a good movie, but we actually watched Trading Places the other night, didn't we, because it was on. And
that is a good... I was going to
really
ask you that.
Movie, but that was... You forget how funny some of those older movies are.
I was going to say that. Have you got a favourite film? I just realised my...
I like the ones like, you know, Notting Hills. No, nice. That's pleasant.
Do you go to the cinema?
No.
Very,
very rarely. I did go and see La La Land, but not with William, because I don't think La La Land would be his...
Oh, it was lovely,
film,
though.
But I enjoyed that.
It's a good one, William.
I went to see it with a friend, but I often play in the lorry. And whenever we're sitting on the M25 in traffic, I always say to Frankie, my head girl, I always say to her, wouldn't it be amusing to have someone in a car behind or a couple that's following, and then if you get in a queue, turn up the music blaring and start
Person
doing
to song.
What they did in the movie. But no, it's a great film.
It is a
For
very
girlies,
good film.
It's a good girly
it's,
film.
It's a good film. Do you listen to music? Do you read?
I like listening to music.
What would you listen to?
All sorts, but I like listening from Andrea Rue.
Who's that? I I don't know who that
classical
is.
Classical stuff.
Oh, sorry.
But really good. James Blunt, Ed Sheeran. I like all sorts
of quite people. Mixed.
Oh, yeah, very mixed. To, if someone got in my lorry or in my car, goes from the Jungle Book to something classical to all sorts. I enjoy music, yeah, all sorts.
What about you, William? Do you listen to music?
No, I listen to music, but more listen to the radio. Yes, I like all, you know, whether it be popular stuff, some classical stuff I like. So I like most music, to be honest with you.
And some of you've all got music on in the old, or?
You know, the old, the Queen and that sort of thing, I still go back and listen to, yes.
He always sings a particular song.
Which one's
when that? When he has a few drinks. A couple of songs you always sing.
Hmm.
It's a little bit funny.
Well, that's Elton John, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good song. What's the other one you always sing? After a few drinks.
No, I don't sing that.
You do, anyway. It
karaoke?
Right.
Have you done karaoke?
No.
No, we don't really. I don't still. Don't think I can sing.
But that's the whole point of karaoke. You're not meant to be able to sing. You just get really drunk and think you can sing. You told me some funny stories about how you guys met, which really made me laugh. And things you said about Pippa when you first met.
We should probably have a drink, shouldn't we now?
Crack open a bottle and get you drink, get you talking. Might get you to sing Elton John.
No.
Because you're obviously from the same area, grew up both from Surrey, is that right?
No.
Oh no, Pepper shaking her head. No. I don't know why, I thought you were both.
No.
Okay, tell me.
Well, I was East Sussex, and you.
I was Kent.
Okay, not many miles away, but there was it because you came to Cyril Light Yard,
yes,
in Sussex? So that's
why we sort of ended
Brendan,
up.
Brendan, yes, yeah.
In this sort of area there.
Okay, got you. So you were from Kent. You came to Cyril Light Yard,
yeah,
who I've got Cyril Light sadly no longer with us, but the very, very successful Brendan Starr. That's where you started out.
I was 16 and you were 14, so...
Yeah, so this was before I went and served my apprenticeship. So when I was starstruck, I was 14 because I used to jump at similar local shows to William, and my mother used to run all the indoor show jumping shows at Ardingly, south of England, through the winter, and she also worked for years at South of England Showground, so the big county show. So I always knew who William was, and I always sort of watched him probably in awe, more, not, I shouldn't say dumbstruck by him, but more in awe because he always was the one that was riding. God, you'd ride 8-10 horses
wow.
in a day, wouldn't you, jumping at shows and stuff. And I had my one to Barnaby, who was doing Pony Club and jumped sort of newcomers, fox hunters at the local show when I was 14. And then when we never met, did we, apart from maybe to say hello because he would come in to see Mum or pay up at the end of the day into the secretaries and I might be sitting in there helping at the
yeah.
show. But other than that, we didn't really know. And then I went up when I was 16 to Norfolk, and I was there for 8 years.
And so, William, what did you think of Pippa?
Gorgeous.
Yeah, gorgeous. No, and then we were at, I think I was at Bell Lodge or something, and we were chatting then, I think one time. I'd left Cyril's.
See whether you can remember all this.
I'd left Cyril's then, and then I was at, happened to be at Mill Lodge, which is show up close to Norfolk. And then I think you were coming down to an event and we got chatting, and then I said, oh, if you ever come down then and you want some stables, come and stay. So then.
To ask you to stay over, it's quite
well,
forward.
No, when I came down.
Lo and behold.
No,
so were you saying that? Were you basically sort of. Because you liked that point, or were you just, was it an innocent request?
It was
or
completely innocent because.
Well,
I
you think that, Pip, really was it innocent?
No, I came down because.
That was innocent for Pip, but yeah, I was.
Exactly.
She looks
exactly.
All right. I'll. Otherwise, why would I want to give her any statement? To be honest.
That's what I thought. Pip for sweet and innocent.
Yeah. What if you thought, snotty old cow?
Yeah.
Why would I offer her stuff? So I came down for stabling, and I arrived, and I had a puncture in one of my back wheels of the lorry, didn't I? So you had to, you changed that?
I think I had to change the wheel.
Knight in shining armour.
And took her out for dinner, and that was it. Stayed in the lorry.
We actually went for a curry. Oh, no, we didn't. We didn't.
Ask William, what did you eat, William? Can you remember?
We went upstairs, didn't we?
Yeah, we went for an Italian, yeah.
I was going to say, it's in too much information about going upstairs, but it's okay. You went
to
Italian.
No, because it was an upstairs restaurant. And then afterwards we went to the pub for a couple of drinks.
So how old were you guys then?
I was 21.
Oh, okay, so it was quite a few years on, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, next year is our 25th.
Wow. 25th years together,
25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow, amazing. What's made it work, do you think?
Really might say otherwise, but I think why we've been incredibly lucky because we've both got a similar sense of humour. We like to have a laugh, and I'd like to think that we're best friends. know, we are really good.
It's lovely. It's really lovely. Yeah.
Good mates, and we do have a laugh, and we've said it actually time again that. We don't like being away and going our different ways, and actually when we spend more time together, we actually enjoy each other's company more, don't we, than when we're when we're go.
Yes. So do you get time to hang out outside of horses together?
Yeah, I mean, like recently we've been together a lot, haven't we? You know, I mean, I think, you know, we'd still be together, you know, when you think of people that work.
Yeah, Pip's a very good cook. She cooks a good roast.
I was going to ask you that. Who does the cooking?
Pip does. I'll do breakfast. Pip does evening. Sometimes I can do a spaghetti. That's about all I'm any good at, to be honest with you.
I usually
barbecue. Even now, if I have a steak, there's a barbecue just outside the door, even in cold weather. So I usually cook the meat, unless it's a roast, and Pip. So I'll normally do the other meat.
Aren't you always at a show on a Sunday? When do you get to do a roast?
Well, the last two weekends, we've
had a Sunday roast,
I stick it in the oven at sort of 4:30, so we actually have an early Sunday when we're here at this time. Yeah. So it's rare, and actually we've had people
around
the last few
Sundays.
Well, we've had customers from abroad, but
they're
great friends of ours, so
they've
happened to be staying. So
and we've had, you know, a couple of short breaks this year.
Where would you go away? Where's your like sort of ideal place, like a beach or activity?
We had a wonderful holiday with Nick Skelton and Laura Kraut on Gary Widdowson, who owned Big Star on their yacht, which was beautiful.
Who was driving? Sailing? Who was in charge of the boat?
Well, he has a crew.
Oh, wow, yeah. So they did the crew. So were you cooked for and everything?
So we could water ski in the morning, you know, then find another island, have a sort of look round.
Wow.
So, no, that was one of the best holidays we've had.
When was that?
We are lucky because we're going skiing in January with Jonathan and Jane Clark, who are obviously
the owners, yeah.
Mine there, and Billy Beware and the Night Horse, MGH Grafton Street. And they're great, great friends. And they've got Shelley and Mirabel, so that's another real...
You say you know all the right people. That's what it is.
So that'll be fun. And we've not been skiing for a couple of years.
We don't have days off. I don't feel guilty about having the odd 5 days of skiing.
Oh, God, no, I'm not saying you should, no.
We don't have days off. We don't have a day off a week.
William's looking very chilled, looking
That's
a little bit too chilled. And how are we? So, are your horses? Are they? I see them all tucked up in bed now. Your horses.
Yeah.
What days are normally? What time do you start and finish, William?
I normally get on a horse about 7:30, so I get up about, or I'd probably leave home 7:15. And
to go to the stud, which is at a different location.
Well, the other yard is a mile away,
right.
So there's an indoor there. So even now, I can turn the lights on and probably be on a horse.
Would you be out there now, not often at this time, wouldn't it?
In the evening?
Yeah.
No, I tend to do. So normally from 7:30 till 9:30, then I can get 3 horses ridden, and generally none of the lads or anybody else is sort of, so they're the ones that are probably most productive for me riding. The rest fits in around customers and other people coming, but normally between 7:30 and 9:30.
And when you're riding them, are you just schooling, jumping? You know, do you only jump?
Whatever they need.
So you do school as well?
Yeah. I mean, mostly it's working them on the flat.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So you don't do that much jump work at home?
Yeah, perhaps there'll be, you know, do some bounces or, you know, incorporate some pole, you know, lengthen and shorten other poles and stuff like that. In general, flat work usually. So
yeah.
There'll be something like that.
Pippa's just coming back in again. So we've got the reason that Pippa's just ejected the yard cat. So she's back now. I've spoken to you about this before, but for the people listening to the podcast, how influential is Pippa on the way your horses go on the flat?
The importance of basics, isn't it, from the beginning?
Yeah.
I think the young ones. Now, if they have a good grounding from the beginning, which comes down to, you know, good balance and knowing what you're doing on the flat, you know, and I think that's probably, you know, Pippa would be, those basics she would be a strong point.
I know you said before, when I was speaking to you before, that you can tell a horse that Pippa started.
Yes, and that's because of those basics. And their basics of riding, which then reflect on the teaching the horse basics, because so many people aren't good enough with their balance and they teach bad habits.
Yeah.
Bad habits come from, you know, having a bad, you know, if you can't balance, you know, then or you have to grip to balance, and you're going to be giving a horse because you're gripping, you give a horse misleading commands.
You've always done show jumping, is that right?
Yeah.
And did you kind of grow up with that, or was that from being with Pippa that you're more aware of that, or?
Yes, no, definitely. I think definitely, as I said, finding that way to get there, I think is, I think if you miss out those early steps, then it becomes difficult to get where you want to go, and that's what so many. I feel a lot of jumping riders have fantastic ring craft, but they miss out on those basics. They go straight from ponies to thinking they're, you know, because they've got ring craft.
What do you mean exactly by that? They've got ring craft. I mean, they can ride well. If they can ride well in the ring, isn't that kind of all that matters in a way? What do you mean by that?
Because unless you can, that's why we're so sure, you know, we've got good ring riders, but you still need to make a horse into a horse, and the horse needs those basics, otherwise it's going to get to a level and it's going to have a chink in its armour, as you will as a rider, because you have to have every step. So yes, most of those ring riders can get to a certain level with their riding, but they won't get to the next level because their balance isn't good enough or something. And the same on the flat with the horse, if you don't teach it, you know, if you just put a big bit in rather than teaching it, you know, to shorten and lengthen in a relaxed way, then it's going to get uptight.
Yeah.
And when the jumps get big enough, it's going to become difficult to control and you're going to knock a jump down. So you might be all right, depending on the talent of your horse, you might be all right at 140.
Right.
When that horse potentially could be all right at 150, or it actually could be a 160 horse if it was better educated on the flat, or you could ride it better between the fences. So over the last 20 years, the sport has become a lot more technical. So the flat work and control becomes more and more influential, you know, and if you see the top Europeans,
their basics are better than
a lot of ours, you know, when you look at, and that's how, you know, show jumping was, they were show riders, you know, we probably gave it the name, you know, it was about going to county shows and Harvey Smith, you know, they were performing and making competition, whereas the sport's more than that now, actually.
Yeah, I can't imagine, might be wrong, I can't imagine Harvey Smith doing his flat work, I might be completely wrong, but do you think that's, yeah, it's really changed?
Yes. They're great horsemen, but where it's changed is it's more technical. You know, when you look at those Horse of the Year shows, you know, even now you look at Malcolm Parr and you see those courses. You can't recognise. Horse of the Year show was. You know, you see him on Facebook. And it's up and down the ring and round. Nobody said, oh, that's five strides going forward. They'd be having, you know, 6-4 infight. You know, nowadays you couldn't get away with you know, every fence, land, balance, and then where's the next fence. From now, you know, especially if you're indoors, probably for a whole course of dozen jumps, everybody's having within 5 strides the same in the whole course.
Yes, it's really all related, so distance, related, isn't it? Yeah.
So then you can't put a bit in and soften the horse. You need to be able to balance that horse going forward.
But why are the Europeans better than us?
I think they're more disciplined and structured in the way they...
I think we fall down show jumping with our system. You know, a lot of in Europe, before you start jumping, you have to have basic knowledge on the flat and stuff like that. So I think, I don't say that makes them that they can ride on the flat, but it brings that awareness that you need to be able to ride on the flat rather than we're so intent on, you know, yes, if you want to go show jumping, you buy your kid the best 12-2 and the best 13-2 and the best 14-2 and that. And then when you come out of ponies, that makes you the best rider. And you're missing a big chink in your armour. Yeah. And there's so many of those that have been European champions in ponies, you never hear of them again because they understand.
Is it kind of parents with cash is getting
so
good ponies?
It's so much more difficult to get rid of a bad habit than it is to teach. You know, when somebody's got a bad habit, normally that stays with you, to be honest with you. And most of those pony kids get more bad habits and good ones. They learn ring craft and they learn how, to a certain extent, to get a horse to jump or a pony to jump a fence, but if you're not careful, it's about training a horse to, you know, to learn to do that from its own balance. If we're not careful with a pony, you're actually dictating its balance, and you can't do that with a horse.
It's because, to me as an amateur rider, you know, I think if you're jumping a meter 40, then you've got to be at a certain level. You've got to know what you're doing. Surely that therefore makes you a really competent rider. I kind of can't. Yeah, it just feels like anyone who's competing at that level must be a top, top rider. But you're kind of saying you can be an all right rider and have a really good horse.
Yes.
But yet you would struggle to go a lot bigger than that.
Okay.
And I think that's the difference with eventing. And that's what I say to the guys that come here to ride the young ones and to jump. The one thing the eventers have from an advantage point of view is the discipline, because they have to do the dressage.
Yeah.
And so when event riders do a bad transition, they're only going to get a 5. You know, they're going to drop 2 marks. Yeah. Whereas in the jumping, if you're just starting your round and as you go from walk to canter, they're not going to lose the competition if they don't do a good transition. But actually, in theory, because they don't drop marks like we do in eventing, but actually it's just as important. But because they don't see that you get 2 marks less for that movement, and that's where I think it does help, you know, with the eventers, you get that sort of slightly more disciplined and so much of improvement. I often say to people, you don't actually necessarily have to ride better. You actually have to just be consistent and self-disciplined, that if you want to go on a line, you go on that line.
Yeah.
If you want to go at whatever speed, you go at that speed. And if you want to do a 10-metre circle, do a 10-metre circle, not an 11-metre circle or a 9-metre circle.
Yeah, so it's just about being consistent and accurate, and putting the work in.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And by being disciplined, it actually makes you ride better anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting. Both of you, any sort of young riders you've got that you think are good for the future? Any sort of particular ones that stand out? William, anyone in show jumping that stands out?
You know, I think we've got quite a few next generation riders, like Harry Charles, very good.
Obviously, son of Peter Charles, yeah.
Son of Peter Charles, Michael Whitaker's son, Jack, he looks a talented lad. Also, Graham and Tina Fletcher, actually, they've so it looks like there's one or two, as I said, sort of second generation. So it makes show jumping sound a bit singular then, but then when you look at probably the last lot, Ben Mayer and Scott Brash, they're not actually from show jumping, that show jumping background. So I think it's just a coincidence that they're keen and.
They worked hard, didn't they?
Yeah.
So you mean that they haven't got that kind of show jumping sort of dynasty thing going on?
Like? No. And it sounds like when you say, right, it's the next generation now, then a lot of them are from a show jumping background.
Whereas it just shows
you don't have to be because the two that came through before that, as I said, Scott and Ben, they're not. You know, the Whitakers, yes, are. They seem to have that show jumping gene, don't they?
Yes, but they're pretty prolific. And it's amazing, isn't it?
But what we're... huge believer then is, you know, like as William said, those ones that's parents have been very involved, they get all that experience passed down, they grow up with that experience. And if you haven't got that background of the family that are involved in the sport in a big way, so you learn from them, if you haven't got that, similar to Ben and Scott, they then serve the apprenticeship. And we're real believers in the younger riders, they've got to find that knowledge and learn it from themselves, but you gain it from a lot of experience. And I think one of the really tough things with a lot of riders in any sport is when they have got the sort of background where, you know, they've got the facilities at home, they're in a situation where they have horses bought, but yet they don't serve an apprenticeship and they haven't got particularly horsey parents. How do they learn at all?
Well, traditionally, didn't they always go and work for someone, didn't they?
Yeah, well,
are you saying that doesn't go on now, or does it still go on?
I think it doesn't go on that much. I think, like, to me, it's more noticeable, like, for sure, Ben and Scott came through and they did do that. William did it, I did it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the only way, but there are not so many. I think a lot of the Irish do it, don't they, in show jumping?
Yeah, but the Irish probably have to leave home because it's very difficult to make it in Ireland because
they come over here or whatever.
Or they go to America or they go to Europe because they have to. They in Ireland's
but like
Ireland the other side of England. Yeah. So the fact that they leave home, it states their intent, doesn't it, that they really want it.
Because the Irish, they're on pretty damn good form.
Well, they've got a lot of riders coming through, a lot of young talent coming through, but. You know, it's very easy to be sheltered at home and take the easy way out rather than getting a job if parents are backing them is to ride. And they're the ones that probably, they haven't actually stated, you know, they haven't really given up anything or really had to, you know, get their arse and do anything to show they want to do it. Whereas the Irish, actually, if they leave home and go to America or they come over here and get a job, they really want it, don't they?
Because there is, I mean, it's an insane amount of money, isn't there, now in show jumping, isn't there? Is it increasing just about money? How much money you got to spend on a horse?
Well, I think it's the same, similar in both sports. So to me, those people that haven't got the money and the backing behind them, the only option they've got is to learn how to produce horses from young horses. Mm-hmm. And that's where what we try and pass on, because that's what William and I have always done all throughout our career. We've produced horses from young horses.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, with the Billy Stud, you know, obviously we're dealing with young horses the whole time, but hopefully we're trying to pass on that knowledge and give people that come to us that experience of learning
with your apprentices,
how to produce, because you know, if they haven't got the funding and backing behind them, they need to be good at a trade, and that producing is one way to do it.
Because British show jumping, I mean, it's not great at the moment, is it? You know, we've got 2012 gold, 2013 European gold.
No, we're on a downhill slide.
What's going on, do you think?
I think we're just, we've got to that time where there's a bit of a dearth of horses. I think horses have, you know, which you can't moan about, there seems to be, you know, Scott Brash has had an awful lot of horses off the road. You know, he has got the backers, and he still is struggling to keep a string on the road. So it's not easy. You know, it really comes down to horse power. We've got decent riders. You know, I think we're in that transitional period, like eventing was. You know, all of a sudden their young riders have made it through. You know, we've got William Whittaker, there's some good riders if they've got the horses, but we're very short of horsepower, and as the global tour and all the horses become so much more expensive, and we have the, you know, the Arabs and the a lot more money into it, it does become difficult to keep.
It's becoming popular there, isn't it? It's becoming a big sport over there, and I guess there's a lot of money there. So is that hard to compete against? That it's a bit like reminds me, you know, the FA Cup with football. You know, it's like, is it the big teams with the big money that are going to end up dominating?
I think to a certain extent, that's why in the UK we've got to concentrate more on riders wanting to and owners wanting to keep horses for British teams and for Olympics. I mean, I think there was a big, because the Olympics were in London, there are a lot of owners that supported their riders to keep horses and buy horses specifically before London. You know, we're on another cycle now, and we're heading towards Tokyo. It's going to be very tough to get qualified this year on present form, unless, you know, we have a couple of new horses for next year. And nobody's quite sure where they're going to come from at the moment, because we are definitely short of something new.
It's a pretty shocking thing that might not even be in it.
Yeah, all right. You know, we've got this year and we've got next year at the Worlds, and we've got the Europeans a year after. So there's time enough, but it looks like a tough battle. You know, and it's very difficult. We need, you know, Scott Brash and Ben Mayer are, you know, at the moment the top guys, and we need them in our top team, you know.
There was a period, wasn't there, when Scott wasn't competing on the teams?
Yes.
Which I think was possibly a bit of bone of contention. Or was it the reasons he was saving his horses for the Global Champions Tour?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yes. You know, Scott's been very much, you know, he won his Grand Slam and didn't do the Europeans that year because he saved his horse for the Grand Slam. And now with the money in the Global, he's very much aimed at the Globals. And So hopefully Scott will, you know, but if he's, you know, yes, it's good to win a Grand Slam, but he's not going to be remembered for a Grand Slam, because it's a one-off thing, and it's changing the rules all the time. There's another event in the Grand Slam this year. So to be remembered, it's about Olympic championship medals. Yeah. And in that case, you've got to be jumping for your country, or you're not going to be there. So hopefully, Scott, I'm sure for a rider with his ability, he's going to want to win Olympic and European medals. So I'm sure he's going to be holding up his corner.
Yeah. So Pippa, in contrast to show jumping being a bit of a blip, eventing's doing pretty well at the moment, isn't it? It's really doing well.
It's looking very, you know, a lot healthier. I think that, you know, I think it's great. I think there's some some very good, talented...
I've got a dog about to jump up on me. Come on.
Dogs everywhere in this house.
Got a very cute dog on my lap now.
And, you know, listen, I think it's good to have a change of system. You know, the system has slightly changed with Dickie Wake, Richard Waygood, and Chris Bartle. But don't underestimate the work that Yogi and his team and Tracy and Peter Murphy did over all those years, you know. And it's not sad for them, but I think a lot of the riders that are coming through this year are off the back of...
Yeah, exactly. Well, there wasn't like a quick fix. They couldn't just literally come in and
lottery funding. You know, all those riders were all sort of, you know, just below coming up, and you could see they were good pilots. You could see they had nice young horses. And it just so happens that this year, a lot of those young horses have broken through and been good. And, you know, I think, to me, Ross Cantor has really shone up this year, and she was always a good jockey. And interestingly, she sort of served an apprenticeship with Judy Bradwell, so she learnt the ropes and crafts of producing young horses, and she does that a lot now.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's gained all that experience, and I think it gives you so much more sort of skills in general horsemanship.
Yeah,
when you learn to produce young ones. I think it's great to see Piggy back again.
Yeah, she's, fantastic. Yeah.
Piggy, I'm obviously very close to Piggy because her sister Nini was my head girl for some years, quite a long time ago now. But Piggy's a seriously class pilot. I think she could hold her own in any equestrian discipline. But there are, you know, they're just two of many.
When I was at Surrey Lights, I went round the Derby on a 6-year-old.
No. Mm. Oh, my God, that's... Wow.
I was the youngest rider in it, on the youngest
horse. How old were you?
17.
And how did you go?
I fell off. It took off from the top of the bank.
Oh.
I fell off at the bottom, got back on and finished the course, jumped the dike clear. Then there were only three of us jumped the dike clear, but I had a fair cricket score, but I was going to finish anyway.
Was that your first time?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, and of course went on to win it three times.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest wins of your career?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was something that I always wanted, probably from them, to be honest with you.
Because three times the same horse.
Because it's our local show. Then it was always something that was, you know, I'd watched Boomerang win it. And it was something that was... It's a special class, isn't it?
And it's Mondrian, isn't it?
Yes.
And would he be your best horse, do you think, you've ever had?
I think I've had several. I think... So I've been lucky enough to have several that have, you know... As Derby-wise, you know, he's been... You know, did the European Championships with him. He jumped a few... He won a few different Derbies. Did some nice things representing... Britain.
What other top horses would you say would be the other best horses?
I'd say Comex was the one that basically is being a national rider took me to the next level, because I was 25, 26 before I'd actually jumped on a Nations Cup, because when I left Cyril Lights or a senior Nations Cup, although I had some success there, I was very paranoid about ending up chasing dreams and ending up with nothing, so I actually have sort of bought this place at 19 and then struggled to pay the mortgage.
This place here? Wow.
For, you know, so business became as important. So really, until I could... I actually sold Comex to a good friend of mine, Morton Orson, as a 7-year-old, and then I bought him back, half back, and then because he didn't suit Morton... And he had him a year and a half, and then basically that gave me opportunity to go the next level, really.
But that's incredible focus, 19, isn't it?
Well, today it's impossible because you can't get a mortgage.
No, yeah.
But in that time it was easier to...
Wow.
It's changed a lot.
Yes.
It's so changed hugely since...
Well, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, it's an amazing place. And obviously, well, you've been here for that amount of time, that amount of work you've done on it. But that is incredible, you've been here since 19. And what about you, Pippa? Obviously, I mean, I imagine Supreme Rock's got to be up there.
Yeah. I mean, of course, Savannah is the first. Also, he's always special in my heart. And Little Coloured Horse Bits and Pieces. He was
That
really gave me a feeling around the sort of the Babington Birdie that it was sort of possible because he was so game on for it. And then after that, it would be Supreme Rock and Primrose Pride. They would be... I mean, Primrose Pride, it was just so... sad, really, because he sort of retired. He was a very big horse, a really fantastic mover and a big extravagant jumper. And, I mean, he won Babington Burley and Kentucky, so and he won an individual medal at Athens. So he was exceptional, and it was just so sad that he was retired by the end of his 12-year-old year. So,
and why did he? Why
bad injury? But it was an injury that was not going to see him eventing again.
Wow!
He did an injury high up at the back of his knee, but it was, he was fine. He's still alive now, but it was never going to stand up to eventing. So that was tragic because he. He could have won so much more.
And
that's the thing. Sometimes, unfortunately, with the sport of eventing, those really exceptional ones that really move and really jump and extravagant can be harder on themselves.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But they were... Rocky and Kiri were very special.
In the toilet with all your pictures. I love the fact that, you kind of think when you get to your level that, I don't know why, that photos somehow would, it's ridiculous, would be less important, or, and you've got your horse and hound covers, three horse and hound covers. So do you still get, if you see like a good photo of you on a horse, is that still a buzz? If you get a cover of horse and hound, does it still matter?
Well, it's only you in that little dance.
I think, I think somebody gave them to you, didn't they? I wouldn't be.
Yeah, Horse and Hound gave them to you.
I would be.
Oh, did they?
Not.
Horse and Hound gave them.
Oh, there you go.
I would have had front covers, but I've never actually kept
them. You don't. Like, if you go into our sitting room, are my pride of place, so if we're sitting at the kitchen, where is that now?
Talk me through those beautiful portraits.
I think it's a girl thing, isn't it? People sit down and go through all the photos from the events, and no more for the horses. Oh, isn't that a lovely picture of the horse? And I would sort of be thinking about the next event.
I wasn't saying that it wasn't ostentatious,
but it was lovely.
These are paintings. So one was given to William of Kevin Z, and then a portrait of.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. Like Kevin Zed, the lady, she was a lovely lady, Heather McPherson, who bought him. He was the highest price. She went to Zangerside and had a few drinks the sale evening and bought the highest price foal. And as it turned out, it was Kevin Zed, who's been one of the most prominent sires. I jumped him up to international 150 level, and she actually died and left him to me when he was. Eight probably.
Wow.
He jumped in a Fox Hunter final. She saw him do that, and she absolutely loved him and he was a whole life. And she'd be looking down, thinking, amazing that he's actually sired horses that.
So is he still around?
They've gone to the Olympics. Yeah, he's 20 now, and he's still going strong, and still, siring my horse for the World Cup in Olympia is from him.
And likewise, Biz, and that was really relevant.
I think Tessa Clark at West Kington Stud. I think did she give us the portrait? I'm pretty sure.
No, some breeders, but Biz is a similar story because Billy the Biz was a son of Kevin's, and just so tragic that dear old Carol Tolliver, who is one of our great owners, and she
sounds bad because we seem like a death kiss to owners, don't we?
She lost her battle against cancer before she knew that Biz was going to Rio.
Oh, it's sad.
So sad. Just before, about a month before Rio. And then Primrose Bride and Sir Barnaby.
Lovely, now a beautiful portrait.
Yes, so we try not to clutter. The idea, we've got an office at the other yard, and that's supposed to be the horse pictures, but we actually haven't got any yet.
We need to.
But it's a very beautiful home, and which you did yourself. You kind of oversaw the decor, did you?
I did.
Yeah, no.
I did it all. Yeah. Chose everything.
She's quite housey as well as horsey. Actually.
Are you
housey?
Yes.
Your horsey housewife.
No, I love my home. I love being at home and love the dogs. Like I said to William, you could never move from here because we've got four of our dogs in the garden that are buried, and it's home. And got Barnaby upstairs and his ashes, Billy Shannon's ashes. Billy Shannon's ashes, Barnaby's ashes, they're all landed.
Are they really?
Yeah, because I said in my will I want all my ashes to be mixed up with their ashes and then scattered where the dogs are in the garden.
That's very sweet.
With my animals.
You shouldn't bury the horses, that would be, you'd need quite a big garden, wouldn't you?
No. But William's brother David, his younger brother, we got Nick Bunn, who does the horse walkers, William's older brother, and his younger brother.
He's Clayton horse exercises.
And David does.
They obviously are the best horse exercises.
Yeah, obviously.
In the whole world.
And then David does a really good job because
he's got the best pet crematorium in the whole world. Cherry Tree.
In Kent.
Oh, wow.
So he.
We can walk them, ride them, and bury them.
Burn them,
exactly.
All bases covered.
Yes.
Yeah. All your needs catered for.
Yes. Hopefully they have a nice.
That could be your slogan for Billy Stud.
Yes.
Yeah.
So on that point, thank you so much for your time. Yeah, I've outstayed my welcome. It's been really lovely, and I think.
Oh, Miss Emmerdale.
Oh no! Thank you so much.
My very first podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. I hope you felt that you got to know Pippa and William a little bit better. I hope that you learned a few new things about them. William is a closet karaoke fan, doesn't like to talk about it. And I really hope that you come back for more. As I said, number two podcast with Pippa and William will follow shortly. I promise it won't take me 6 months to do. And I hope that you stick with me because this is a bit of a journey for me, really. There, I said the J word, I do apologise. But it's a real learning curve. It's something I said I wanted to do for a long time. And I've got the journalistic skills and experience behind me. But the technology side of it is a whole new thing to me. So I apologise, the sound quality isn't always great. I did slightly get the sound levels wrong with Pippa and William. I will improve on that. And I will stop saying so often. But my key thing is I want to create a community where you feel a part of the podcast. This is your podcast. This is something that you can get involved in. So if there's someone you want to interview, if there's someone you want me to interview, please get in touch. Before every podcast, I will put out a request for questions, anything you want to ask. You're a question hero, then please do let me know. Got some exciting names lined up already. Got Trevor and Caroline Breen. I've got Tim and Chanel Price, Piggy French, just a few of the names. That will be coming up very soon. I promise I'm not going to take 6 months over everyone. If you've enjoyed this, please do tell all your friends about it. If you haven't enjoyed it, just keep quiet. Yeah, that's okay. Maybe don't talk about it. Oh, I'm coming up to a gate. Hang on one second. And it closes, yes. Being on South Downs, my horse Pepper is a complete pro. I seem to have lost my dog though. Spike! Here he comes. Good boy. Good boy. Haven't got any treats. Sorry, I forgot them. So watch this space. Plenty more stuff to come. Until the next time, take care and enjoy your horses. See ya. Bye.